You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Nick.
I was trying to finish up my pizza before I spoke, but...
Yeah, no. You just keep on eating.
Yeah,
Nothing new there. You eating into your microphone, chewing in your microphone. I'm used to it. Yeah.
Mm. I do. So you know, before we opened this, we were just talking about how we need to switch up the cold opens.
We just need some fresh material, I think.
Yeah, we've been getting into a little bit of... It's kind of stale.
As somebody who comes up with fresh material for a living, I was hoping maybe you could help us out.
I got fresh material for you. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for this? Here we go. Okay. We're going to do word association. Okay.
I love it.
I'm going to say a word, and then you say the first word that comes to your head, and then I'll say the first word that comes to my head, and we'll just like see where this goes. You know what I mean? Like, let's be improv actors.
I hate improv actors.
So great. This is going to go so
well.
Let's
do it.
Okay. Owl.
Tree.
Beer.
I thought we were going back and forth.
Got Alex.
Is it just me?
It's we do it back and forth. So
this is why I failed the improv. Look, I'm going to tell you, I signed up for improv classes one time.
Yeah.
And they kicked me out. Because I couldn't make it one day. I was like, hey, like you guys have like 19 classes a week. I'd booked a job or something like that. And I was like, I know I signed up for this Sunday at 2:00, but can I do the Monday at 4:00? And they're like, no, like only the one you signed up for. I'm like, well, I can't do that anymore. They're like, okay, well, no refunds. And I never went back after one class.
Well,
so I'm terrible at this game. So, all right, let's start over.
Boat.
Murder.
Little justice.
That's it. That's it. Welcome to Little
Easy.
Justice. Easy. Done.
People say improv's hard, but I don't know. That was
so easy. It's so easy. Of course. I'm Nick Walker. Who are you?
I'm Alex Smola.
And today we
improvist.
Have improvist. Improv actor. Improver.
Improviso.
Improvisimo. We'll ask Jenny about it. We'll ask her to tell us what the correct pronunciation is. But more importantly, today we have possibly the best guest we've ever had in our lives.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had some good ones on here. We've really run the gamut. But rarely do we have somebody on who fills a deeper emotional hole, you know?
It really is, you know, somebody who walks in the room and you just know that the world makes sense. You know that everything just fits. You know, she is an actor. She is a grad student at the.
Is she an improvisimo?
Sarah, are you an improvisimo?
Not really. I didn't mute my mic for that entire intro, and it was really, really hard to not laugh out. My mouth has been covered by my hand this entire time.
That's good. That's what we want.
Do you see how I crack your wife up, Nick? Do you see how much joy she gets from me?
I don't.
You're
see
just it. So funny, Alex. You really are an amazing improv actor.
Thank you so much. I don't know
You're
where
welcome.
It comes from. Where my ideas come from, you know? I hate getting that question. Where do your ideas come from? Because I don't know.
They come. It's just it's unblocked inspiration from above.
I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from the racist backwoods of Pennsylvania. That's where it comes from, right there.
We're very cynical out there, yeah.
we're cynical people.
We're cynical people, these backwoods Pennsylvanians. Yeah.
But
pretty racist too. Yeah.
Sarah Joyce is our guest. We haven't said fully who this is. This is my amazing wife, Sarah Joyce. Life partner.
Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm first so official happy to be time. Here.
You've been here on and off, like in unofficial capacities, but now you are in the hot seat.
You're the guest.
Oh my! I'm a little frightened and grateful and worried and concerned and joyful and the whole thing.
Just like our marriage, just the same.
just joyful and concerned,
so and scared
and anxious. Yeah, scared and when's it gonna be over?
Nervous.
Sarah,
counting down
the days. Sarah, so you know, obviously, I mean, it's funny because so as we record this, right, we are, you know, Sarah is literally in the living room next door, so like I can't see her. You know, as we record this, it's very sad. It's like, oh my God.
I want to point out, just to try to drive a little more division between you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick, you have for this podcast, you have a nice professional microphone. You sound
I didn't know if this would be
clear.
Easier to edit.
And Sarah has been left with a headphone microphone.
Sarah, if at any point you want to just come into this room,
you like, have you the right ability. Now. I'm not saying she needs to be in there with you, but if I was you, if I was a gentleman or trying to be a gentleman, I would give her the good mic and I would, you know, bring myself down. But I guess you think that you're more important.
That's
Sarah,
not.
So.
See, this is
projected. Sarah, do you see what's happening here?
I really appreciate that, Alex. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful for that.
Do you need anything? Do you have everything you need, like a glass of water, or you know, Nick can go get it for you.
I have the water bottle that I filled up myself. I have the blanket that I put on top of myself.
Oh, that sounds so comfy.
I have our cat that's on my legs right now, so I can't really move.
Amazing, and a husband who just gives you the crumbs. I get it.
Crumbs, nothing but crumbs. Door is closed. Nice microphone is hidden. It's our marriage.
It's our marriage.
This is a metaphor.
I'm so excited. Yeah, this is gonna be a great episode.
This is gonna be great.
So Sarah is obviously in San Diego. She is now, as we record this, on winter break from grad school. So the first question, of course, Sarah, is how has the first semester of grad school been? How was this? This was an experience that, for those of you who are joining us, you know, coming from the Hamilcast, you had talked about auditioning for grad school, and then you got into, you know, a pretty amazing grad school. I would dare say one of the, you know, I think what rated the fourth best rated grad school in the nation. It's pretty amazing. You know, so you're doing this incredible thing, and now you are free at least for the next 4 weeks. So how was that first semester? How did that go?
It was very, very challenging. The schedule is wild. It really, really is. Because for a few years, I was auditioning for programs, and they're all very, very hard to get into. And then I got into the one that I really wanted to go to, which is great. And then I got here. Oh my goodness. It's just I haven't read this many plays in like a 2-3 month period, and I think my eyes still hurt from reading all the plays that I read. But I don't think I've ever been so exhausted but so happy before in my life. So it's been this
That's
is what
amazing.
This is what a lot of, you know, like new parents say, you know, after they have a kid. But this is what I'm saying about
this
getting my
MFA.
Cool.
See, because in my head, the idea of going back to college is really appealing, especially after a year of like isolation and quarantine. Like the thought of going back and being forced to like study a lot and learn new things and get practice in without like, you know, where you're just focused on doing that one thing. Is it as gratifying as it sounds to step back into that environment?
You know, it really is. And it's interesting because at our age, like we're proper adults now, we're in our early 30s, and I am so much more secure as a human being. So being able to take in all of this information as a student, there's so much more critical thinking. There's a completely different perspective I have now just as a student, as opposed to, you know, when I was in conservatory in my early 20s and I was just a mess and just trying to do Chekhov and Shakespeare when I was an insecure, broke mess in my early 20s. So
what has it been like with COVID too?
Oh my God. So it's been a blessing and a curse, to be honest with you. During COVID, it's such a blessing to be so focused on school right now, mm-hmm. because it's still happening. Granted, it's happening on Zoom, but having this extreme focus on something right now, especially on something that you love, and the students get a stipend for being here, which is really, really fantastic. So if I wasn't in grad school right now, I would just be unemployed during quarantine. So that would have been a challenge. Let's just say that. So it's been a blessing, but also the curse part of it is that, you know, it is completely over Zoom. So all of our scene work is happening through laptops. All of our classes, we're in our apartments, logging Zoom.
It's funny because like you're doing work, you're doing acting for stage, but inevitably because you have to do all of your scene work over a camera, you're doing film. So
and it's bizarre because we did the Fall Shakespeare show that's associated with the Globe was A Midsummer Night's Dream. And you know, we all filmed it in our apartment. And it's just like they dropped off a professional camera. The sound crew gave us microphones. They dropped off costumes. I did my fitting via Zoom. And then every day, like I was called at like 9, and depending on who I was playing Titania and Hippolyta. So I either had to have all these I had to do my own like makeup, lighting. It was utterly insane, but it was also really cool because we got to learn about all of this stuff, and you know, now we can set up lighting for auditions like pros.
Yeah, it's like a nice skill set. Such a weird situation though. It's so bizarro, like Twilight Zone.
I gotta jump in here because I will say, as somebody who's had
shit, you're still here.
Oh my God.
it's Alex, he's just such a captivating person to talk to.
I got so caught up in the energy of our conversation, Sarah, I just forgot.
I'm never not caught up in your energy.
I could vomit. I could vomit on both of you. No, but I think that's one of the, I think, you know, as somebody who's gotten to watch Sarah do this, I think that's one of the wonderful things has been kind of the way that she's been able to adapt to this new situation. And, you know, it's especially for people who are studying theater and studying classical theater. I mean, like this is like, literally could be one of the worst situations because like you can't be in the same space. That is theater. That is literally what theater is. And even, I mean, that's kind of what film is too, but what I've loved has been, you know, watching kind of the malleability of how Sarah, you know, if I may gush, how you have approached your curriculum and how you've approached these classes. And, it really has been, I mean, quite, and just being real, just really inspiring to see you tackle this schooling. And like the schooling is still hard. I mean, these people are, you know, when I tell you that these people are working her, she, you know, she has class from 9 a.m. to 5 and then usually has rehearsal from 6 to 10. So, and that's Monday, that's Tuesday through Saturday. So it's, I mean, it's a full work schedule. I mean, she's going. And but you have done it and you're continuing to do it, and you have done it while at the same time finding time to maintain your sanity and your emotional health and your physical health. And that is really, really wonderful. So I'm just very proud of you. Very proud as your husband.
Aw, thanks, Nick. Thank you so much.
That was really sweet.
Yeah, you know, she's my wife. He's my wife.
Yeah. The key to getting through stuff like this is to keep it new, right? Like, you really want to keep things fresh. The key, new.
Stop.
Key
new. And you've done it so. The problem was like you have pivoted so.
It should have so early.
So early and so poorly.
Well, like early and poorly. Well, this one.
Oh, God.
No, 14 minutes is not too early.
I mean, not too early. Because
we need a lot of before we get into selection, we need a lot of
coverage. We do need a lot of coverage.
We've gotten all the what's up with everybody's life out of the way. Like, you already know this stuff about Sarah, too. You're asking these questions like you're interested about finding out the answer, but you know. You're acting right now. You're false.
I'm not acting. You know. I consider myself a conduit for the people. I'm here to ask questions.
I see.
So that the people can gain further knowledge and insight into Sarah's life.
Yeah, you're like a lawyer. You never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
I am not an advocate for her. I am but a looking glass. Do you know what I mean? I am the lens.
So Keanu.
This is all very Keanu.
And
all
so Keanu.
I'm lost. I'm completely lost right now.
Just like our marriage. And just like our
couple therapist.
Just like our couple therapist every day.
So lost. So confused.
Well, Keanu is so Alex attempted to do a pivot and it was terrible, but Keanu is the subject of today, which is why you're here, because when I told Sarah that Keanu was happening, it was kind of like we knew we kind of wanted to bring Sarah on, and then when I told her, it was kind of like, yeah, Sarah's gonna have a lot to say about this, the Keanu movie. Like, what is your connection? Can you just break down, Sarah, just a little bit of your connection to Mr. Reeves and his work, because I feel like you actually, this is a very deep subject for you. This is like very, very deep cut. Like, take us through it.
Listen, okay. I have been a lifelong Keanu Reeves fan, even through all of the mockery and the hazing and all of this other nonsense. Ever since I was a child, I have always been a Keanu Reeves stan. I was like 9 years old defending this man's work to the masses. I can get into it now. Like, my background on Keanu Reeves. First of all, he's a very talented comedian. Second of all, when he was what, like fucking 22 years old, when he was really, really young, Fox was just like, hey, you, we're going to put you in this movie. We're going to ask you to lead this film for our studio. I know we're in a kind of a different time now, but in like the early 90s, how many people in their early 20s could have done that? I mean, have I done that? Have you done that? That is a hard thing
Big
to
ass.
Accomplish, you know?
Yep.
And I think a lot of people who comment on maybe, you know, his quote unquote really chill energy that translates into stupidity, I really don't think that they're well versed in his entire body of work and how he actually does have some freaking talent. You know, it's just, it goes deep, Sam. It goes deep.
So I'm glad that you brought this up, because this is something, you know, I watched, again, at the time of this recording, in the past couple of weeks, a video game is called Cyberpunk 2077, which if you haven't, I don't play video games, but
you watch video games. Is that
I love what I will fall asleep to a good cutscene compilation. And so I have watched all 8 hours of cutscenes from Cyberpunk.
See, it's probably for the best. So I'm in the middle of playing it, but it is a buggy mess. They released it way too early, so probably better to just watch all of the cutscenes.
Sarah, have you heard of this video game?
Not really.
So this video game is like it's Cyberpunk. It's like a, you know, first person crazy.
It's like the world of William Gibson, basically, like Neuromancer. Like, it's all people And the Matrix. I mean, it kind of fits with Keanu because of that. It's digital. What would you call it? Like a...
I mean, cyberpunk. Like literally cyberpunk. Like cyberpunk world where people are kind of half...
Dystopian digital future.
Dystopian, yeah. People are kind of half machine, half man. But Keanu Reeves is the star of this video game. He is a character named Johnny... Oh my God.
Silverhand.
Thank you. And it's he like is your spirit guide is the best way to say.
He's basically like he plays this bioterrorist who dies, but his consciousness is transplanted. Yeah. He's a rock star who like decides to go blow up a building one night after his concert, and like he's like a bad guy, and he gets his consciousness transplanted onto a little chip that then the actual main character of the game, like 50 or 60 years later, ends up having to like, you know, whatever, put it in his own head. And then so this guy basically just has Keanu Reeves in his head for the whole game.
Oh my commentary. God.
Like, every time you go to a mission or something, he just like pops up and he makes some snarky comment about it because he's kind of like an asshole. And
he's sitting there like,
get
like
out of here, Keanu.
like the devil on your shoulder, just like talking to you the entire time. And it's
like, imagine if you had that in your life. Like if any decision you made, Keanu Reeves popped up like sitting on a table nearby and just made some comment about it.
Like some
about
how stupid you were.
I would actually be a very happy person.
Right? You need to watch some of these cutscenes here because you will laugh your ass off. They're like truly ridiculous with him.
It's
like, he's in his full like John Wick hairstyle, you know, like the lightly bearded, like full long flowing hair, but like also in like this like tank top and like tatted up and like these tight cargo pants. And it's just, he just looks insane. Oh my goodness. It's insane.
It's so good.
But yeah, I say this because the reason I'm glad, you know, circling back to the original point of this, I'm glad that you brought this up because so one of the many benefits of being married to Sarah is her introducing me to several worlds of film, right? I consider myself a lover of movies, but I, you know, when I started this marriage, admittedly, had a very, very, very specific era. I would say it was from 1993 to 1993 and had to do with Jurassic Park. And Sarah has very much expanded that. And one of the things she's expanded has been showing me that Keanu Reeves has range and very much advocating that. And that is something that I have really loved opening up to. You know, so I mean, it's to your point, Sarah, I think that is something that we kind of have associated with him is like this kid who just can't act and, you know, got into the movie business. But it was a bit of a smear, like you said, a smear campaign.
Like, let's break it down a little bit. I mean, about what is the Keanu fact? Like, what is it that people see on the surface of Keanu? Like, what is a Keanu Reeves movie? What is a Keanu Reeves performance? Because it goes deep, but when we did Nicolas Cage, it was kind of the same thing. It's like you shoehorn him into this idea of who he is, but there's actually a lot more. But like, who is it that people see?
I think that shoehorned idea of who Keanu Reeves is, I think it really does get its inception from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. You know,
you think that was like the genesis of it?
I think that's where... I think that's where Fox, once we start talking about kind of how Fox put him in career jail for a minute, I think they kind of pulled from that. But I think he did get a reputation and he got a bit of, you know, he was typecast after that kind of like, whoa, kind of dumb energy. And that kind of, and he's played a few characters like that. It was in Parenthood, he got cast as that, even after, you know, the sequel of Bill and Ted. I think that's where the inception is.
Right. Interesting. And it kind of runs through more stuff. Cause you move into movies like Point Break, stuff like that, where like it's a more serious, like he has a more serious profession. He's got a bigger world than just being like a dopey stoner. But he still carries that, like, how much is really going on behind those eyes, Keanu?
How much is really going on behind those eyes?
You good, Keanu? You good?
You good? Like, but that's the question, right? Because he it seems like either there it's in one ear and out the other, and he's just happy to be there, or he's really processing it and just not projecting it in a normal way. You never know.
I think in Point Break, he was playing an FBI agent. And I think with FBI agents, you have to be clean, crisp, you know, to the point.
Right.
You have to follow the rules. You really, really do. And you have to kind of blend in and be that person that people don't really notice. And I think he, you know, brought that into his performance. And he developed a very deep and beautiful friendship. You know? Right.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is we actually had this brief talk a couple of days ago about not a couple it was like a couple of weeks ago, I think, about Johnny Depp. Maybe a couple months ago. Oh my God, I forget. But do you remember that talk we were having?
This was like last week.
There you go. I just started my, you know, like it's crazy. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to remember details, dates. You know what I mean? It's like Memento over here. But you know,
it was last week.
Listen, it's 2020. All the weeks blend together. We don't know where we are. We don't even know if we're going to survive. We're just making it day by day. Thank you for being a friend. You know, it's Johnny Depp, the Johnny Depp, you know, quandary, conundrum, the idea that this is, you know, actors who have training, right? Actors who have that specificity of thought in their line, in their delivery, you know, people who are able to bring something that seems crafted to a performance, and then the actors who are more their personality, right? They're just kind of showing up, and nothing like there's no judgment in any of this. This does not make you less of an actor, but there's the, you know, then there's the actors who show up and kind of have that personality and just appear on screen, and that's what you get, and that's what it is. And then there's the actors who can kind of do a blend of both. Like we'd said that Rachel Weisz is, you know, one of her gifts is that she is clearly an actor of craft, but is also it's just so natural, right? She has probably done pages and pages of work on every character she plays, but you would never feel that she is acting something. It is always just grounded and central in her and never feels forced in any sort of way, as opposed to, you know, as much as I love Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Day-Lewis is coming in to act. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like you're seeing this man act, and there is that kind of performance quality to it. And so my question to you, Sarah, is where do you feel Keanu falls in that kind of spectrum? You know, knowing his preparation, or maybe you do, what do you feel that he's more of a craft actor? Do you feel he's more personality? Do you feel he's more craft that ends up feeling like personality? Like what do you feel that is? What's your gut?
I think that's a good question. And we were talking about, I think the conversation we had was kind of comparing Johnny Depp's work as a character, like Johnny Depp's work to kind of Brad Pitt's work, or even Leonardo DiCaprio's work, when we were having this conversation. And I was like, well, you know, it's kind of like Rachel Weisz and I don't know, like Kate Blanchett, because Kate Blanchett, she's very much a character actor and she can disappear into any single role. Whereas Rachel Weisz's work, I wouldn't necessarily call her a character actor. I wouldn't say that she completely disappears and blends. She always brings something that's quintessentially her. And what is quintessentially Rachel Weisz is just, there's always a grounded intelligence, but it doesn't even matter who she plays. Like, be it Evelyn Carnahan in The Mummy, or even that fucking Jack Black movie where he made that, like, poo spray. Do you remember that?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes.
She played his wife in that movie. It was a whole thing.
Weird.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. But in terms of where Keanu Reeves kind of falls on that spectrum, I feel that he's more of he goes by feeling. He's more of just an instinctual feeling actor. You know, Johnny Depp isn't formally trained, and I don't believe Keanu Reeves is either. I think a lot of the actors who kind of came out of that era, I think the film industry was just trying to capture straight up essence. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But yeah, I think
like a George Michael music video, just the essence. The essence of George.
I made Nick watch some George Michael music videos the other night, and it was a really
just randomly like, hey Nick, get over here, you gotta see this. George Michael music videos.
It was like three George Michael music videos. I forget what started it.
It was. I think we were singing Freedom, and then you're like, "Oh, I want to see this one." The thing is,
we were watching Always Sunny bloopers, and I was like, yeah. "Ooh, now I want to watch the Freedom music video from like, when they did."
Of course, this is your guys' life is just sitting around watching Always Sunny bloopers together.
That's literally all we do.
Transitioning to George Michael music videos.
Accurate.
And then and then talking about the Mummy. Like,
yes.
But to get back to your question, I wouldn't necessarily say he's a character actor. No, I don't believe Keanu Reeves is that. But he does have range. Like if you compare his performance from one of my favorite comedic performances from Keanu Reeves is his work in the movie I Love You to Death. He plays this drugged out punk of a guy who shares all of his scenes with William Hurt, and he plays like this hired hitman, but he is so incredibly funny in this movie. If you compare that role to his role in Constantine, it's like night and day. It's very, very different. But I wouldn't say he completely transforms. He does have a proper energy that he brings to every single character. I think there's an ease, maybe a bit of an aloofness, but there's definitely an ease there that I personally love.
You know, and can I say this? And this is the other thing that you just made me think of. I will say, Keanu, I feel like without knowing him, without ever having been on set with this man and watching his process, I feel like this is someone who has picked up tricks of the trade as he's gone along. Because the Keanu that we're seeing now, his in general, how he uses a camera is incredibly different from the Keanu that you see.
There is a reason he has lasted this long, and there is a reason why he is still on top.
Yeah.
Do you think when he gets selected for a role from a director, do you think that he gets chosen more specifically now? Because like early in the 90s, he's like a pretty boy young actor, and they're sticking him in whatever blockbuster they have, whether he fits or not. He's just, you know, a big actor. They're going to make him a big actor. Now he is Keanu Reeves. He's got such a history and such a persona. Do you think that the stuff that he does is a lot more selective of Keanu Reeves, almost like tailored to him specifically? And maybe that's why he's, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. When Nick and I were watching the John Wick movies, we were kind of talking about how those films really, really play to his strengths. Mm-hmm. You know, he's such a physical actor. He can move really well. He can do all these things. But something that Nick said that did make me kind of just like, that did kind of spark a Keanu Reeves debate we had in our relationship was like, you know, Nick said that he thought that the people who created John Wick played to his strengths by giving him very few lines. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I mean, okay.
He has more range than you think.
Yeah, he does. And Sarah, and you showed me a movie, and I don't want to, just in case it's your choice, I don't want to get into that movie. Is that movie your choice?
John Wick?
No, the movie that we watched in response to my comment.
Oh, no, I don't think that's my choice. But Alex, to answer your question, you know, I do think at this point in Keanu Reeves' career, because he's worked with so many different people, I think they know who they're hiring. I think they know what they can get. But I do think they're also intelligent because they know he can be very serious. They know he can be incredibly funny and very, very charming. I think they know what they're working with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Keanu.
He's
really done so much stuff. I'm thinking about all the different stuff that he's done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we get into, well, first of all, you know, we need to, as always, take a commercial break or just a break because, you know, maybe when you're listening to it, there's not a commercial yet. Sometimes
we'll never know.
We'll never know. We just know that we need to break and then we'll come back. But when we come back, you know, we'll get into our movie choices. So like, we'll see you on the flip. You know, enjoy our ad revenue, you sons of bitches.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And we're back. See how quick that was? It was so quick. It was amazing. Easy. Edit point. But this is, so before we get into the movie choices, I wanted to ask about this because this is something that I think we sometimes run into on the show. Are we picking the quintessential Keanu Reeves movie or our favorite Keanu Reeves
movie?
Well,
I think especially because we've got three of them. Yeah. You know, I like to, in this situation, pick one that's not, maybe not the best or not even the quintessential, but has an interesting talking point to it.
Yes.
I think between the three of us, we will land on the best, the most Keanu-y Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if not, there's no way that we're not going to, like, we're going to talk about, we already have talked about so many of his other,
his other works.
Right. There's so many options.
Sarah,
know, what do you think?
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I know you asked, you know, to make some choices. And whenever you ask me to like make some choices, I'm not sure if I can. But I think I have one or two choices, and then I have just a few honorable mentions.
We love that. That's going to be really fun. Well, I mean, you will go last, as you are a guest of honor. So we will save yours for the last bit. If you're just joining us for the first time, which, you know, maybe you are, like, welcome. How we do this is we set this up. You know, we describe the first, you know, 30 seconds to 5 minutes of the movie until another one of our intrepid travelers guesses what the movie is. I think we'll all be able to guess these movies pretty quickly. I'm assuming that we will all guess each other's movies very quickly. I'm also wondering, Alex, if you and I might have chosen the same one.
I know that we've talked about several Keanu Reeves movies throughout the course of this show. And I think there's one or two that get kicked around a little more.
Yep.
And I chose one of those. So we may have. And it's a weird choice because it's not quintessential Keanu, but I think if we're talking about his range, I think it's a revelation of his potential.
Range. You know what? Then I'll go first because mine is quintessential Keanu. Mine is like quintessential Keanu in a movie that quintessential Keanu potentially does not belong in whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Don't let him do that in this movie, or don't, or please help him. Please find something different. I mean, I think that's kind of the whole, my perspective on the whole movie is like, do something different. And not just with Keanu. I think this movie in general is just like, good Lord. So you guys are going to get this right away. Cause we open with flames.
Devil's Advocate. That's the one I picked.
Let me tell you guys,
that was mine.
I love it. I love that we went to the same one. I knew we would, because it's so wrong.
I'm sorry, I didn't. Please,
Kevin Lomax.
John Milton.
Nice to meet you.
So, have we been treating you well?
Very well, thank you.
And your wife, she had a good time?
She sure has. It's been great. The whole thing's been great.
That's our secret. Kill you with kindness.
This movie is amazing. So wrong.
It's got everything.
Guys, Can I tell you really quickly? I just want to tell you what my experience with the movie was. So in 1996, my mother and stepfather got a divorce, and it was a bad divorce. It was very painful for my family. You know, we won't talk about that part. What we will talk about was the next year was very much a year of me and my mother like bonding as a unit. And so part of that was movies. We went to see every movie we could together, and that like we movies were very much our how we bonded, because we and part of that too is like we're you know Sarah can attend.
This is not a movie that you see with your mom.
Here's exactly what happens. Mother, you know, we're bringing, you know, she brings me to the movies because Sarah can attest to like. Me and my mom also like not the most talkative people often. Like as much as I'm talkative on this, like we like especially like if we're recovering from something, if whatever, we're very much people who like to just kind of zone out and like be in our own spots. And so the movies are perfect for that. So she just knew all she knew about this movie was that Al Pacino was in it. It was about lawyers. It looked really interesting. She was at that point like starting to dabble in. You know, and looking at like maybe a career transition into the church. So like, it was like, oh, the devil's advocate. Oh, that's interesting. Y'all, I sat down at the Circle Cinema right outside of Boston College in the movie theater with my mother. And we sat down to this film. The first sex scene, gratuitous sex scene, is within 20 minutes of the opening. Do you mean, I mean, the first scene in itself is incredible. Is Keanu Reeves, you know, destroying the character of this poor young child in Gainesville, Florida.
Have other teachers ever asked you to stay after class?
Once or twice.
Did they want to talk to you about your behavior?
Objection, immaterial.
Goes to motive.
Overruled. You may answer the question.
Well, I don't know what the other teachers wanted. You'd have to talk to them.
You ever pass notes in class, Barber? Maybe a note that made fun of Mr. Geddes.
You know, it's a case. He's a lawyer defending, you know, a client against a charge of child molestation. And, you know, you have this, the first person you see in the movie is this poor young girl on the witness stand who's clearly been molested by this guy. And he, like, the guy's clearly guilty, and yet Keanu Reeves launches into this tirade, blaming her for her own sexual abuse.
You're writing here about Mr. Geddes, aren't you?
It was meant to be a joke.
Have you ever had a party at your house, Barbara? When your parents were away?
Objection. Your Honor, this is way out of
credibility line. And bias.
Overruled. Answer the question.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a game called Special Places? You're under oath, Barbara. A man's career, his reputation, his life is on the line. This is not a joke. Have you ever played the game Special Places?
Yes.
That is the first... See, that is the starting point of this film. is a school child blamed for their own molestation, and it only goes uphill from there.
It is, and it sets up the question, am I a bad person?
Yes. I'm going to tell
is
you.
Is what I'm doing wrong if I'm blaming this school child for being molested? I don't know. Let's take a movie and find out.
Let's take an entire 2.5-hour film to find out everything that is done in this movie. Is,
oh my god!
It's and so let's talk about the Keanu of it all, guys, because that's think where why I chose this. And I, Alex, I want to hear what you think about this too, as it's your choice as well.
Oh, his accent! Oh,
accent.
Boy.
We got to talk about his accent.
First, the Keanu accent. There have been several fantastic examples of Keanu accent throughout movies.
Oh my god.
Definitely one of them.
His accent in Bram Stoker's Dracula, listen, it was a bit of a shame, especially because his mom is actually English. But like, come on, we got to give him a pass for that. The making of that movie was apparently very tumultuous and odd.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've heard that as well.
And his performance is notoriously Keanu. I mean, that Bram Stoker is definitely one of the ones that set him up for like, oh, maybe he is just Keanu. Maybe the range isn't really there.
But like, Sarah, you know a lot about Bram Stoker. Because talk to us about what that rehearsal process was. Because they almost rehearsed it like a play, didn't they? Like, wasn't
they did? So Francis Ford Coppola got the rights to this movie, and he brought all of the actors to some cabin. I think it was in England, or maybe in the English countryside. He got all of the actors to stay and rehearse in this cabin, and they played endless theater games and like improvisational games and things like that. And a lot of these actors in this movie are just straight up like LA film actors.
Oh yeah. I'm sure Gary Oldman loved it. And then everyone else is just like, what?
Gary Oldman, Carrie Elwes, and Anthony Hopkins were just like, yeah, this is what you do. I love this. But like the guy who played the Rocketeer, who also played Quincy in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
He's a Campbell sibling. By the way, he's a Naomi Campbell and Christian Campbell's older brother. I always forget his name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's. Yep. Hold on, I'm gonna find it right now.
Oh, Nev Campbell.
Naomi Campbell. That's what happens when we're watching goddamn George Michael. So I'm thinking Naomi Campbell.
I was really music for video. A second. Wait, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Hang on, Nev Campbell, sibling Rocketeer. I'm gonna find this guy. Because I know this because
you're bad at Google.
Oh wait, no, I'm wrong. No, you know what? I'm wrong.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna say anything, but I was I don't think that's true.
He looks like Christian, but he looks like Christian Campbell. That's why I'm.
They could be kin. They could, in fact, be kin. They really could be. But yeah, this actor in the making of documentary, he's just. Chiseled face, very LA, hasn't been a day of theater in his life. And he was just like, we were playing all these weird theater games, and it was just really bizarre. But like, there are certain shots of how Francis Ford Coppola had Keanu Reeves kind of go outside in nature and read Shakespearean poetry out loud. Because Keanu Reeves, like, he loves Shakespeare, and like, so you see a lot of scenes of Keanu Reeves outside reading Shakespeare and practicing, and you know, he did his work.
He did his work. Guys, I just want to jump in there really quick. The actor's name is Bill Campbell. So I'm not completely off. He is a Campbell. He's just not from the Campbell dynasty.
Word.
Campbell dynasty. But yes.
Good to know.
I'm not completely stupid. No, but yeah, with this, I just, you know, your character is from Gainesville, Florida. Now, granted, Charlize Theron not helping you out. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's not coming in with a consistent accent either. But it was just, with Keanu, it was just so much. Maybe because he is a lawyer in this movie, maybe because he spends so much time, you know, expositing, talking, you know, and it's a very verbose character. It's like nails on a chalkboard. It just hits you. It hits you hard.
Yeah.
It hits you fast.
Well, I mean, Keanu's placement in the Hollywood scene is a little like his character here, right? He seems like a good down home Southern boy, right? Raised by a mom, you know, small town, just a nice plain dude. Which he is in this movie, except that he's like the best lawyer
ever,
and not only in town, but ever, and getting recruited. And so you get this fish out of water sense, right? He goes to New York and he can handle it, right? It's not about he's in out of his depth or anything like that, but like who he is as a person, you kind of stick with this idea that he's got good down home roots, right? He's a mama's boy, and he's and nothing about the script, the character in the script really says that. It really is in the casting of Keanu Reeves that stays believable, that there's despite everything he's agreeing to and the situations he's in, you still like him, right?
Yeah.
You know that there's an innocence in there. There's a resistance to this evil. So,
but the evil is personified by an actor named Al Pacino.
Touch, but don't taste. Taste, don't swallow. And while you're jumping from one foot to the next, what is he doing? He's laughing his sick fucking ass off. He's a tight ass. He's a sadist. He's an absentee landlord. Worship that? Never.
Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Is that it?
Why not?
You can take every single sex scene out of that movie. You can remove Charlize Theron fucking slicing her throat. And that, yeah. Al Pacino's performance would still make this film the most vulgar thing you have ever seen in your life.
All I wanted, and I never realized I wanted this until I watched it recently. I wish that they had taken the last part of that last act, the big 20-minute sequence between Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves, where it's all just unbroken, you know, for forever. They're just talking to each other and the scene's evolving. If that had just been the whole movie, right? In a giant office at the top of a building and the devil is trying to recruit you, and just do the whole movie like that,
Alex,
and just let the two actors like that. That would have been awesome. Like, you don't need the rest of the movie, doesn't even make sense. Like, you have to know, because the movie's called The Devil's Advocate, that he's the devil going into it, or else the first half of the movie doesn't make any sense. And when it comes out that he's actually like a supernatural being, it comes out of nowhere and it doesn't relate to anything. And like, it like the whole movie leads up to, it's like it just to pay off this one big scene at the end.
I just need to jump in there. I need to say this. I call dibs on writing that play.
Absolutely, you do.
100%.
Yeah, that's a Nick Walker play right there.
That's fucking brilliant. I would love to see that. Oh my God.
Right?
I would die. But what you got to cut is the Connie Nielsen sex scene in that. You got to cut that way out. That thing comes out of nowhere. It's the whole thing.
Well, it's not really a sex. Are you talking like at the end when she's like,
yes, when he like plays her on the bed, on the desk, like,
well,
have sex.
They don't actually have sex though.
They start to, and then he turns into Al Pacino.
It's a trick.
Oh my God.
He's tricking the devil.
I hate that scene.
Why does Al Pacino keep getting hired to play such stereotypical Jewish character?
It's his yell. It's his scream. It's that
girl. You're an absentee landlord.
What is going on in The Merchant of Venice and then in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? This is an Italian man. Hiring him to, like,
Schwartz.
I'm not even Jewish and I find it very offensive.
It's pretty incredible that he has been hired to play several
these
Jews.
These guys are good.
Like, he's just so crazy.
It's amazing.
I mean, I will say, though, Al Pacino's performance is absolutely the most vulgar thing. Second place only to Delroy Lindo's uncredited performance as the goddamn witch doctor. Do we remember this?
Oh my God.
Where he's like in the basement, like cutting chicken heads and like speaking gibberish. It is,
it's just too much.
It's way too much. Whole movie's way too much.
And again, it doesn't make any sense because the movie doesn't even start playing with like biblical nods and stuff like that until a while into it. When it's because it's supposed to be, right, the premise of the movie being he's going to work for like this law firm that only defends guilty people, which is a cool concept, right? And it's run by the devil. Like, as an elevator pitch, that's fucking amazing. As a movie, you don't know any of that until you're almost done the movie, that like that's the whole point of what you're watching.
Yeah.
And sort of throw random voodoo stuff in and like it just comes out of nowhere.
Oh my God, it was so. And then Jeffrey Jones, pre-scandal, is in there. you know, pre his.
Yeah, but I mean, so in terms of Keanu in this, and we don't need to spend too much more time on it, but I think it really shows, because he does have range here, right? And he's wild eyed and a little bit, you know, pretty boy hollow, but he's also got passion about stuff, and you see in his face, he doesn't know what to do, right? I feel like that's what an actor needs to be able to portray is conflict, inner conflict. He does, which he does.
He does portray inner conflict. I will say though, I think that what I love about this movie, I think that looking at his performance in The Matrix, right? I think that Matrix doesn't happen without this movie. And I'll tell you why, because I feel like
Constantine does either.
Here's the thing. He, you know, this movie comes at the point in his career where, you know, every leading person actor gets this in their career when they are paired up with the heavy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the younger up and coming. It's you know, Michael B. Jordan had it with Creed, and Sylvester Stallone. Like you pair the younger one up with the older one, and like they have like a, it's like them going head to head, and it's very exciting for the audience to see like the new generation and the older generation bat it out, you know. And mm-hmm. this is his first foray into that. And he Al Pacino runs away with this movie, and there's no way that any actor can wrangle it back. But this, I think that dealing with this, you know, what amazing preparation for when you truly are the centrifuge of your own mm-hmm. film being The Matrix, right? Where it's truly the Keanu show and the universe spins around him. And the one thing I will say about that performance is, watch it again, Matrix, he is grounded. Like I gotta say, as for all of his like I know kung fu, like that shit, like it is actually a really grounded performance. Like that's the only way I can mm-hmm. describe it. Like you're like, yeah, I follow you, exactly like we're saying. He is that you know, average Joe who just happens to look like a Greek god, you know, but we want to follow him, and it works. And I think that whatever, you know, kind of ill fit that this movie may have had, mm-hmm. you know, I wonder if it prepared him for The Matrix, because that was a different actor to me in the, you know, 2 years later, a completely different actor.
Only two years?
Yeah. Matrix is 99. Hmm. Yeah. This was 97.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would not disagree with that. So Devil's Advocate. I love it. It's a pretty bad movie too.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. Go watch it.
This is some pitch, all this. You must need me pretty bad. What do you want?
Well, Eddie was right. I want you to take over the firm. You and your sister.
Is that it?
No. She's ovulating right now.
What?
Your vanity is justified, Kevin. Your seed is the key to a new future. Your son is going to sit at the head of all tables, my boy. He's going to set this whole thing free.
You want a child?
I want a family.
The Antichrist.
Whatever.
Get drunk and awful. So Sarah, cue us up. Let us, you know, tell us, you know, describe your movie to us, and let's see if we can guess it, you know, by how you describe this film.
Now, which movie or which choice are we talking about right now? Please forgive me.
So
I'm a wonderful wife. I'm a great partner.
You are.
Give us
like your prime Keanu. Like when you think of the Keanu movie that gives you the most joy, what is that movie? Describe the opening of that film, and then we can talk about the honorable mentions and the one, you know, the ones that are like right below there or maybe like right on par with that. But like
not my favorite Keanu Reeves performance, but like the quintessential quote unquote Keanu essence
based on all the stuff we've talked about today. where, like, yeah, what is the Keanu?
The Keanu movie for you.
Yeah. What is the Keanu movie?
Oh, I can't choose. I have it down to two, but
which one do you think we would want to talk about more?
I'm not even sure if you've seen this, but okay. So,
oh, I think I know what it is.
I kind of gave it away already, but the movie starts with like a xylophone type of situation. very festive music, and you see images of pizza going across the screen.
Jesus Christ.
Of pizza? Nope, not what I thought.
Yep. And then, Sarah, you got it.
and then you see a very tan Kevin Klein flirting with a sea of women.
Yeah.
And you see the fabulous Tracy Ullman and River Phoenix have banter.
The movie is tell us the title, because it's, I mean, the movie is, of course,
I Love You to Death.
You know my cousin Marlon?
Well, of course I do. How are you, Marlon?
What?
This is my favorite Keanu Reeves performance. It also does kind of align with what I think the quintessential Keanu, what even other people would think of the Keanu Reeves essence. Again, a huge reason why I'm such a fan of Keanu Reeves is he has more range than most people think.
If we're gonna waste the dude, we ought to get paid for it, man. That's the American way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're not communists here, you know. We're Americans. We've got a right to make a living.
He's, again, he has very good comedic timing. He's hilarious. Like, there's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where he's just doing comedy. But this movie in particular, he's acting opposite William Hurt most of the time, and they are just being utter clowns, but it truly is some hilarious work. And you know, if we're going to talk a little bit about his range, it's just like he, in every single performance that he has, he always subtly inserts comedy, he subtly inserts romance. Like, he is the rom-com, he's done rom-com, he's done romantic tragedy, and he always does squeeze in a little bit of leading man energy. But regardless, it's I Love You to Death. It's just
let me jump in on this for a second.
I've never even heard of this movie.
You should watch it. I mean, it's like straight up
great, but it's like an early 90s
like black flip comedy.
Yeah,
it's but this is, I just want to, this is something that I just want to be clear about with Sarah's choices of film and Sarah, what Sarah looks for, because it's something that is very unique, I think, to you, Sarah, where it's hard to describe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that one thing that you really love in a performance are idiosyncrasies. Do you know what I mean? Like I feel like one thing that makes you laugh, or like it's almost, because the things that make you laugh sometimes are things that I don't even know if they are, like, just watching them, I don't know if they are intentional on the actor's part. Like, I don't know if, you know what I mean? Like, because they're like these behavioral things that happen that like maybe are studied things, but they're just so natural sometimes that I don't know if they are. And like it's very much like, just like, I've just noticed that is something that you love is and find hilarious, or like the little idiosyncrasies of people. So like, it's not even like, there are lines in this movie, like the experience of watching this movie with Sarah, there are lines in the movie that are very funny, like that truly land, and Sarah will laugh at some of those lines, but it's more like the awkward looks that like William Hurt and Keanu Reeves share. Sarah just like will go into peals of laughter for like 5-10 minutes about these little idiosyncrasies, and I think that is Am I correct in saying that? Like, that is something that is in this movie.
That is something that I do love in a lot of things. In this particular performance, I think there might be less idiosyncrasies that you think I laugh at than you might think. Because these two comedic performances are very, very choreographed, very, very clean, very, very funny. I think it's less improvisational. I think there was less room for those wild, natural moments. I do laugh at Joan Plowright, I think that's her name, her little moments, and River Phoenix's little, like, idiosyncrasies in this film. But Keanu Reeves, that's a clean performance. It's a clean, hilarious, consistent comedic performance.
You took a taxi. How could you do that?
What's wrong with that?
You came here to kill Joey.
So what?
So it's generally not considered a very good idea to take a taxi to the scene of a crime.
Hey, man, look. Be cool, okay? I mean, you know, the dude's only a taxi driver.
So could you set up the plot of this movie for us? So
yeah, I want to know what's it about.
So it's kind of based on a true events, but Kevin Klein plays an Italian immigrant. He lives, I think they're in California. But he owns a pizza place. He is married to Tracy Ullman's character, who's doing a flawless American accent. And he is a serial cheater. Kevin Klein cheats on his wife like crazy, and she has no idea. But, like, River Phoenix plays her friend, who's low-key in love with her, and he's like, you don't see that your husband is cheating on her. And the amazing Joan Plowright, I think that's her name, plays her mother. Tracy Ullman tries to kill Kevin Klein because she feels utterly made a fool of. So she tries to kill him a couple of times with the help of her mom and River Phoenix's character. It doesn't work. And then they end up hiring these two ridiculous clowns to kill Kevin Klein.
Who are
Keanu Reeves and William Hurt. And they're just utter messes. And they end up shooting him in the head and, like, in the heart. But it takes forever because they're so stoned. and, like, Kevin Klein doesn't die. It's just, like, this whole thing. It's a ridiculous film, but it's amazing. I recommend people watch it.
And it makes sense to me that you would be drawn to a movie about a woman trying to kill her husband. Something about that,
Alex,
just
we
works.
We have been having this conversation for the past 2 days.
Everybody thinks I'm going to kill Nick. Literally everybody I know thinks I'm going to murder my husband one day. Like, they think,
but in reality, it's going to be me because you've asked me to do it for you. And
someone else is going to take the fall. It's going to, no one will think of you. We'll live happily.
I do want to be clear. You heard it here first.
Exactly. You heard it here first. If Nick ends up dead,
you know why.
The extent to which I would botch that.
be like the lady killers of Tom Hanks.
He was bludgeoned 17 times and he's like burned somehow on his leg. Like, what happened here?
That's kind of
a boat involved.
Sarah, isn't that the part that is true, that they, like, actually did shoot this man in the head and he did survive?
Yeah, because in one of the previous assassination attempts, Tracy Ullman and her mom in the movie put a whole bunch of sleeping pills into spaghetti sauce. So he eats all the spaghetti with sleeping pills in it. It slows down the bleeding, and that's why he doesn't die from the gunshot to the head and the gunshot to the chest.
Oh my god!
It's so ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous. But I do understand. I do understand what you're talking about, and it's, you know, yeah. Watch it. I'd be very interested to see what you think, Alex. Like, you know, it's a very.
So Emily is not super into, like, really violent or gory?
It's not,
like, I would not say anything like that.
No, not at all. It's a very light, kind of dark comedy.
School.
What?
School, man, you know. Pledge allegiance.
Oh yeah.
Hand over your heart.
Yeah, right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic under one invisible nation.
Nations under God, whose
spacious skies and amber graves of liberty for all.
deliver us from freedom. Harlan.
What?
I can't watch this, man.
But if I may, just so I don't go too on, just so I don't go on your lovely podcast, that is my favorite and quintessential Keanu Reeves performance, but I just have some quick honorable mentions. Keanu Reeves' work in My Own Private Idaho and his work in The Gift. These are two really, really surprising.
Is The Gift the Katie Holmes movie?
It's with Kate. Yes, I think Katie Holmes.
I'm gonna look it up so we can make sure we already fucked up.
So or was it? But anyway, it's with Kate Blanchett plays this kind of fortune teller woman, and
Katie Holmes is, yes,
yeah, who's from the South, and I think Keanu Reeves plays Katie Holmes's husband.
Yeah, directed by Sam Raimi. Jesus.
Yeah, and
yeah, it's good. I think I remember Katie Holmes for different reasons.
Jesus Christ! Is there like a nude scene?
Yeah, I think so.
God damn it, Alex. Well, maybe don't. Maybe go back to.
It was like just post Dawson's Creek. I was like 11. Of course, I'm going to remember that.
Terrifying.
Sorry, I'm a terrible person.
Yes, you are.
But anyway, so in The Gift, Keanu Reeves plays a wife beating, very violent, bigoted husband. And this is a performance that I don't think people would realize is in his wheelhouse. And he does a good job. And again, his work in My Own Private Idaho, it's very, very nuanced.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's very, very nuanced and quiet, but there is a lot going on behind his eyes. And the relationship between him and the people in that movie is truly, truly beautiful. I really encourage people to see both of those movies before they're just like, this guy can't act. And he's just only incredibly one note. It's just like, no, he's really not. Like, not a lot of people can do what he's done in his career.
Yeah. Sarah, can I ask you this? When Keanu was on the ground and could not fire at Bodhi and instead chose to fire into the air, you know, screaming, Bodhi, of course, played by the late great Patrick Swayze. What was behind his eyes then?
His eyes were squeezed shut because he was screaming. His eyes were squeezed shut very tight.
That's
what was going on behind his eyes. He was heartbroken. He didn't want to hurt his friend.
A great ass!
Now, if you want a nice early Keanu, like I think this is pre Bill and Ted. This is probably why they gave him Bill and Ted. He played the older sibling's boyfriend in Babes in Toyland.
Wait,
have you ever seen Babes in Toyland with little Drew Barrymore? We're talking like E.T. Drew Barrymore in Babes in Toyland, where he like. They're all in the car singing like C-I-N-C-I, singing about Cincinnati in the car in a snowstorm. It's like a very wholesome kids movie. And then he's like the prince who like whatever. It's like a Wizard of Oz, you know, dream sequence kind of movie. And he is so positive. He's so, because usually Keanu's got that like, there's like a darkness around it, right? There's like a fog of anxiety that goes into what he's doing. And this movie is just so wholesome. And Keanu is so, because it's a kid's movie, so it's way over the top. His emotions go over the top. And you could tell he's probably high the whole time. It's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal, fun movie. As I remember it from, you know, being very little and having it on VHS. But yeah, Babes in Toyland. Watch it.
Oh my God. I haven't seen that in so long. He does bring a certain innocence. Especially when he was younger, I think that's why he was so good in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, because these were two people who you know wouldn't hurt a fly. But I think that's also why he got cast in Dangerous Liaisons as the character that he did get cast as. He was the one who set the plot to rights, so to speak. He was the moral one, and that was for Bill and Ted as well. It's all because of Babes in Toyland. It all goes back to Babes.
It all goes back to Babes in Toyland.
I will say, love it. One of the things I do love about Keanu Reeves is you know, I love that, you know, especially in today's day and age where it's like so many actors, I think, fall into this trap of, you know, putting themselves out there in a way where it's, you know, you have just as much of a social, you know, gossip presence as you do an acting career. Keanu has never quite, at least as much as I've seen, especially like in this later, you know, half of his career, has never. Oh, my headphone just fell out.
Nope. Good job, asshole.
Thanks, baby. What love an you.
Idiot. God,
he's never quite fallen into that, and he's always been. You know, he is famous for donating to several charities. I know his sister had a battle with leukemia, and he founded a cancer foundation. He also builds motorcycles. You know, he volunteers at charities.
He's had his fair share of tragedy in his life.
He's
been through a lot, and he just seems like a genuine guy.
Kind person. You know?
The one that I love hearing about is he was on a flight that got brought down because of snow or something like that early. They had to land early, and it was like an hour from their destination. And so he hired a bus to drive everybody on the flight the rest of the way. It was like a commercial flight. And to get everybody there, he paid to have buses take everybody the rest of the way.
Well, and he's like, that's kind of how I'm looking at this quote here, talking about how he views money. And he says he's been quoted as saying, money is the last thing I think about. I could live on what I've already made for the next few centuries. So he just gives it. He understands that this is, you know, it almost seems like he just believes that when you get this, you give it back. You give it to people and you help people. And that is something that very, you know, it's a very rare thing, sadly. You know, so I just love that is who he is, and I, you know, don't know him from Adam, but he just seems, Keanu, you seem like a awesome freaking person. So thank you for everything you do out there, man. You're cool.
I saw him once in real life. I had a really intense fangirl moment. Me and him both saw the same closing performance of The Seagull, Kristen Scott Thomas, Zoe Kazan, Peter Sarsgaard, I think, was in it as well. The last performance was a Sunday matinee, and I remember I was in line. I asked the guy in front of me, I was just like, is this the right line for ticket holders? And it was Paul Dano, because his girlfriend was playing Masha, and he's like, oh, yeah, I think so. I was like, oh, my God, thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul Dano.
Thank you so much, Paul Dano. And then all of a sudden I hear the most intense cough I've heard in my life. It was like, oh, oh, oh. And like, I look to my left and I see Keanu Reeves just like
amazing.
Kind of power walking to the door. He looks very put together, but he has really, really bad cough. And I think he might have been like limping a little bit. I don't think he was feeling that well that day.
Right.
But he had, like, he was seeing this performance. He was like either the first or the second row. And I remember just at the top of the show, but especially during intermission, loads of people came up to him to like talk to him or get his autograph. And that doesn't usually happen very often when you see actors like just in the audience at New York Theater. Usually people leave them alone, but he was very gracious and very kind. And I remember him giving each person like a lot of genuine time and attention. And I was just like, man,
yeah.
I hope your cough improves, Mr. Reed.
I love when people do that. It was, you know who did that, that I was actually like, and I shouldn't have been shocked, because this, I've actually heard this several times. Zac Efron. He came backstage at Hamilton, and he was like, true. I mean, I didn't meet him, but I just saw him. Like, I was going out, he was coming in. He was like, hey man, that was great. That was so, and like truly was like going up to people and like talking to them and asking them questions, and like truly just like, I just love that. I love when somebody is that big and can still be genuine. That just makes me
a friend of mine is a producer on his recent show. Something like Zac Efron.
Trying to kill Zac Efron.
So he was a producer on that. So he was telling me how they were in Southeast Asia somewhere, and they actually had to fly him back to the States. Like, he literally almost died doing it. Like, he had a medical helicopter fly him back to the United States in an emergency. It was pretty nuts.
God.
Yeah. I asked him a little bit about Efron. He said, yeah, he's just like the nicest dude ever.
That's so awesome.
It's
good to know Efron. Some celebrities, Nick, are dick holes. Just big dick holes.
I mean, so tell me if you find one, man.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see him go that way. But, you know, some of us are just not celebrities. We're just guys out here in the world, you know, trying to make it. Trying to make it work day by day. Thank you for being a friend. You know what I mean? Sarah, you are a gem and a light in this universe.
Why do you keep saying thank you for being a friend?
Because it just reminds me.
Is this a thing? Is this a thing of yours? Like, you always go back to the Golden Girls when you're hosting this particular podcast.
Thank you for being a friend. I think I am in a Golden Girls mood today.
Okay.
I don't know what that's about, but
watch the Star Wars Holiday Special. I forced you to watch the Star Wars Holiday Special with me the other day, and Beatrice Arthur has a song in it.
Starring Beatrice Arthur, Harvey Korman. Jefferson Airplane.
and introducing Boba Fett.
Diane Carroll.
So really quick, then. So I assume you guys caught up on Mandalorian. Let's just really like the whole thing that Disney has set out now. So I don't want to give any spoilers because it's still
no. We gotta say this.
All right, turn it off now if you haven't watched the last episode of Mandalorian.
I want to ask your opinion, Alex. I know what me and Sarah have been talking about. So here's our question.
Yeah,
do you think that season 3 is just Boba Fett, or is
No. Did you see the post credit sequence?
But that's what we're wondering. Yeah.
It's his own show. His
own show. So
Boba Fett is going to be its own show. Okay. So, is my understanding of what it is? They wouldn't just not have Mandalorian season 3.
See, that's what you think, but I'm also
because I mean, Disney just came out with this whole slate of shows, right? Like, they just announced 18 different Marvel and Star Wars TV shows. I think Boba Fett's one of them. My concern with this is that Boba Fett is now an old fat man.
This is not
the cool gangster bounty hunter from the 70s. Who was going to, you could believe, would roll around and be a badass. This is somebody who doesn't fit in the suit anymore, who also has shown you that he's a good guy, right? He has taken off his helmet and proved that he's actually a genuine human being with emotions and is a person and not just a walking suit of bounty hunter armor, which is what Boba Fett was up until a couple episodes of Mandalorian ago, when they kind of reintroduced him, or like, they all of a sudden they just added this depth that he had never had before. My concern with an entire show based around this person is like, they've set it up for him to be like the new Jabba the Hutt. And I just don't think that it doesn't feel like that's who he is.
Well, okay. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, right off the bat, we see him sit on that throne, but they completely do away with any sort of slavery. So we do know there are some morals there. We do know he does have a strict code, because I do think you can't have a Boba Fett show without exploring the dark side. And I think something that they did keep is that, like, he's real good at blowing shit up. You know, like, he's really, really good at that. I think they went out of their way to show that he likes it. So I think there's going to be a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot to work with in terms of, yes, this is a man of honor and he has a very specific code, but it is his code. You know what I mean? So I think that's going to be fun to kind of be like, is he into sex slavery? No. Does he honor his agreement? Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, will he blow you up? Yes.
Yeah.
I guess it's interesting because, like, we don't, you know, because all we ever saw of him was he never spoke. He just showed up to be badass for a few minutes and then supposedly died, but actually didn't die. So, like, it kind of is a blank slate, and I'm just hopeful that it goes the right way. That they fill the slate right.
I think they will. I think I think that what's wonderful is you set this up. Again, you know, I was reminded of this when I, you know, watching this episode. You know, we are so used to the morality of the Jedi and of the Skywalker clan that we forget that, like, these people don't exist in that moral spectrum. So, like, while they are making choices that, like, to us in the context of the Mandalorian seem like, oh, they're good people, they're not rebels and they're not empire. Like, they just exist in this middle ground. And so I think that, because, like, when Luke came in, that's what I was struck by. I was like, oh yeah, Luke. And I was telling this to Sarah, like, we've been so used to watching the, you know, Mando and Bo-Katan and all these people fight that when you put them up against Luke Skywalker, like, you all of a sudden remember, oh yeah, Luke is actually a whole other level of badass.
Yeah.
And, right. And that, I think, is kind of the fun space that these people get to, like, I think honestly, what I just had this thought. I think what Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni have done so successfully, if you look at all of these TV shows, you have literally built a Star Wars TV universe of, like, all Han Solo clones. They are all coming from Han Solo archetype. Like, every single person is straight up, like, playing with that, like, rogue who maybe has a heart of gold. That is every single person in the show. Like, even Ahsoka Tano, who, like, you know, like, is, you know, like, the most Jedi of all, is also, like, the Jedi don't exist anymore. Do you mean, like, everyone's in that moral gray space? So I think you can, with every one of these characters,
there's a lot more modern than I mean, A New Hope is so patronizingly moralistic.
Yes.
It's just good versus evil, like, so simplistic in all of that. So it is nice to see them have gray. Because TV is so good at gray, right? They've got the time to explore it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're going to live. So
can we talk really quickly about Michael Biehn and Michael Biehn's acting choices?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk.
In the Rosario Dawson episode, I was kind of bewildered because...
Yeah, you were very upset.
The entire time, it's just like this. Okay, that is Michael Biehn. That is Kyle Reese. That is the father of the revolution. You know what I'm saying? And Michael Biehn, I don't know where he made those choices from. He's just some dude who's following orders, and he tries to shoot Mando.
But I have orders. I got to follow orders.
I've got orders. But the whole time, he's just making, like...
I did not realize that that's who that character was.
That was
in the Ahsoka episode?
Yeah, that's Michael Biehn. Yeah, that's the actor.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, it didn't click when I was watching it. I know I recognized him from somewhere. I just kind of brushed it off.
He was doing this weird voice, and he just looked so bored the entire time. I was very happy to see him in this show, but I was just like, what is this man doing?
It did seem like he was trying, like, a laid back. Because, like, no, I mean, looking at his work before, do you mean, like, I'm thinking of Tombstone, I'm thinking of Terminator, like, this is a guy who can, in fact, act. Like, really.
Oh, yeah. He made some out-of-the-box choices in this episode, which I think is why, you know, he had such a successful career. And I respect it, but I was just like, what's going on, Michael Biehn?
He was very laid back. Super, super laid back.
Incredibly laid back.
Incredibly, almost undetectably laid back. His work was almost imperceptible to the human eye and ear. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Sarah. I think you're right, and I am excited for the new Star Wars universe. I think this is exactly the direction.
You know what moment it was? And we're going way beyond. I assume if people don't want to hear about this, then they could have turned it off already. So we can just keep going. The one moment in the last episode, between all of the stuff, the Luke Skywalker reveal, the Boba Fett, the one thing that really made me happy and gave me confidence that they were in the right place from a storytelling perspective was the Alderaan conversation.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Where they finally, because that's always been the thing, right? Is like, wait a minute, like, they just blew up the Death Star where there's a lot of people living on there who had nothing to do with any of this. And they're celebrating the murder of all these people. It has always been like the running joke, right? Because the original movies were so black and white. it was like, okay, we defeated evil. What blowing the Death Star up means we defeated evil. So to see a character in that universe actually say, you killed millions of people on that station. Like, my friends were on that station. There were families on that station. Like, you celebrated it. You were dancing in the streets because of this. Like, that felt more than anything like the setup for where this is all going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that sadly, and Sarah, you brought this up today, that was a theme that I think Rian Johnson was trying to explore in The Last Jedi, right. but maybe it just wasn't the vehicle. Now, here's a question I do have for you, Alex. And me and Sarah have talked about this. When the hell are they going to stop with this de-aging bullshit?
That was really disappointing.
I was, and like, they had me until he took off the hood. And I was like, and I mean, I was still affected. I mean,
this says to me, okay, Luke Skywalker will not be a character on the show then.
At all.
If they had brought it in, if they had found somebody who looked like him, and very obviously with the black and the hand, like somebody who could be Luke Skywalker, have him show up. Because that says, hey, next season, this is like somebody that we're going to play with now. This is going to show up. But this way we know he's going to remain this mythic character, even though they've, you know, and it looks terrible. It just looks god awful.
It looks bad. It looks bad. The first,
you know, when he takes his hood off and he didn't say one word, he looked very good. You know, he looked good. He looked good.
He did.
I'm not sure about, you know, the technology. I was thinking it would have been cool if they had the reveal of him from the front, and then the rest of the scene could have been him maybe in profile. You know what I mean?
Right.
It would have added a really cool tone, but it just wouldn't have looked so terrible. I'm not sure if the side view, you know, requires more muscle work. I do not know. But that did not look good. It really did not look good.
And it's interesting because, you know, when it did look good, and you know, so Peyton Reed directed this, who you know, is the director of the Ant-Man part of the franchise of the MCU. I will say the only time I've seen de-aging that I was like, ooh, that actually looks great, was freaking Michael Douglas in Ant-Man 1. That first one was like, holy shit. Oh my god.
As far as it goes, I mean, I think the Irishman's the only one that's really pulled it off, and they didn't really pull it off.
Dude, they did not. We got it. Okay.
It's about as good as it can get.
No, dude, here's the Irishman was proof to me. Okay. Here's the, and we talked about this. The issue with the Irishman was that like you had, it really, I will say they pulled it off maybe for the scenes when they're supposed to be in like their late 40s, early 50s.
Right.
Maybe. The scenes when he's supposed to be in like his 20s, 30s, and is supposed to have the body of a 30-year-old man and is like hobbling around. It literally just looked wrong. At that point, it was like, just hire a different actor. Like, it's too much.
Right.
It doesn't work. God bless them for trying, and obviously all those actors are just incredible, and we want to see them on screen as much as we can. But I did not think The Irishman was successful. I thought it was a grand experiment that failed grandly.
That's fair.
But Michael Douglas to me in Ant-Man, I thought that was like chef's kiss. Great.
Looks so shiny.
It was very shiny, you know, and it was almost good in Captain Marvel. I was impressed by Captain Marvel because I was like, ooh, okay. Like, I mean, you're having to work with this guy to like get him back to, you know, his Pulp Fiction days and sustain it for an entire film. And they kind of did. Like, I was kind of like, okay. But yeah, Michael Douglas, you know, who knows? I think we just need to let this go. And find more, like, we accept that Mark Hamill is now very, you know, is much older, and he played a character that will forever be iconic.
What makes it weird too is like we've seen him old now in the movies, like in that universe we know what old Luke Skywalker looks like. Yeah. So now we have old Luke Skywalker, we have young Luke Skywalker, and we have young CGI Luke Skywalker. It adds an element to Luke that we didn't really, I don't know.
It's like after after Return of the Jedi, he just got really on his skincare. He started getting all of these moisturizers, right. And his skin just, like, as he got more powerful with the Force, the shine, the sheen of his skin also got more powerful. Moisturized. Yeah. That is the moisturized Jedi.
The topical power of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, what would you guys have done?
The midichlorians right there, all up in his face.
Oh, yeah.
What would you guys have done if this dark cloaked figure makes his way through the Star Destroyer, green lightsaber in hand, destroying dark troopers every left and right, opens the blast shield doors, Pedro Pascal standing there ready to fire at him, guy takes off his hood, and it's Al Pacino.
What a flight!
Guys, I think this is like the nerdiest episode that we've ever done. I think this is it.
I like the whole getting the movie choice stuff out of the way so we can just talk about Star Wars for 15-20 minutes.
It's really what the episode's about. But yeah. Let's spare them. Let's wrap it up and spare them because we'll just talk all night about the shit. But Sarah, you are amazing. Thank you for being a friend. I got it in.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
You're the best.
You're the best,
guys. Please, you know, as we close in on the light at the end of the tunnel with this pandemic, you know, please take care of yourselves, please do the research, please you know, look into these vaccines. You know, it is a real pandemic and these are real vaccines, so please read up and own this knowledge for yourself, so that you can be you know, like, right, you know, really we are approaching what can hopefully be a new era of this thing. So let's stay in there and stay safe, everybody. You know, stay safe.
Good words. Good thoughts.
Thanks, buddy. All right, guys. We will see you soon. Have a great day.
Little justice. Fuck yeah.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.